Erin Carr is the author of the new memoir, Strung Out. She looks to shed light on the opioid crisis and give a voice to the over 2 million people in America currently battling with the addiction. The memoir explores how heroin shaped every aspect of Carr's life and details the various lies she told herself and others about her drug use. It is the story of resilience while also an investigation into the psychology of addiction and why people turn to opioids in the first place. The name of the new book is Strung Out, One Last Hit and Other Lies That Nearly Killed Me, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Erin Carr to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for inviting me. I'm glad to be here.
At what point did you know that you wanted to tell this story, to write a memoir that is very, very personal?
So I have an advice column called Ask Erin that I started on my old blog in 2009 and moved to a site called Ravishly in 2015. I began to open up more and more about my past in the advice column and started writing personal essays and articles about addiction and recovery. I realized that the more that I shared about my story, the bigger response I got. And I knew that I could combine this passion I had for writing with a higher purpose of telling my story in the hopes that it can aid destigmatizing addiction, make people feel less alone if they're struggling with addiction, and to give people hope.
So let us begin with something you just said of the stigmatizing of addiction. How do you think that manifests itself?
Shame. I think that shame plays such a huge role in preventing people from getting help. I think that it plays a huge role in people relapsing. And it's a barrier for so many people. It certainly was for me.
In finally deciding to write about it and obviously having done the work that you had done with the column, did you have to fully understand what had happened, what you had been through, before you could examine it in a full-length book?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I wouldn't have been able to write this book if these events had been really close to me time-wise. So I've been off of drugs for 17 years. So I have the gift of time. I've done a lot of therapy since then and had the time to sort of process it in my personal life. And that gave me a huge gift in writing it because as I went through the narrative over time, I could have my present-day voice give a perspective that wasn't there when I was going through the experiences.
So your childhood is somewhat normal, or as normal as any childhood can be. And then at 13, you start using heroin.
Yes.
How does that happen?
Well, I mean, it was normal, but I did have some childhood trauma. I was sexually abused at the age of 4, and I wasn't completely cognizant of what had happened until I got older. I had this, like, fuzzy, horrible feeling about the events that had happened, but I was so young that I didn't really have a grasp on what had happened. I didn't tell my parents, and as I started to grow up, by about the age of 7, 8 years old, I started having panic attacks and suicidal ideation and depression, and I just didn't have the language to express it and really didn't trust that if I told anyone, they would still love me. It was sort of this primal fear that a lot of people struggle with. And at 8 years old, in the midst of a panic attack, I was in the bathroom and found an expired bottle of painkillers. I did not know what they were. They were Darvocet. That had been my grandmother's post-surgery and had been sitting there a long time. But there was a warning label on the bottle that said, may cause drowsiness. And I wanted drowsiness. I really needed this exit from my feelings and exit from reality, and I liked what it did for me. So from the age of 8, I started occasionally stealing pills from, you know, family members' medicine cabinets, friends' parents' medicine cabinets, and this was in the 80s, and we didn't have the same sort of child safety on prescription bottles. It wasn't as difficult. When I was 13, I was with a boy who I had lied about my age to. He was a little bit older and started feeling anxious and asked him if he had any Vicodin or Valium. He said no, but he did have heroin and asked me if I wanted to try it. I said yes. It was a really simple decision, which is confounding for a lot of people. But I think what's true for a lot of people who struggle with addiction, the addiction is presenting itself, is there underlying before the drugs come into the picture, because the drugs are really symptomatic of a larger problem.
Right. It's safe to say that if he didn't have heroin on him and it was something else, then the story would be different, but only slightly.
Right. Exactly. And I may have found heroin somewhere else anyway.
Do you think that given the time frame of this, that your story of how you came to heroin is any different than the stories that we hear from the epidemic that is plaguing this country right now?
I don't know that it's that different, other than it's really prevalent now. I think that I was more of an anomaly at the time period. You know, this was late 80s.
Right.
I think I was more of an anomaly. And now I think there are a lot of girls like me, and it's part of what really propelled me to want to put my story out there. I mean, there's certainly no shortage of addiction memoirs, but there really have not been a lot from a female, young female voice, and certainly a young female heroin addict. There are so many young women like me, as far as like the boom in opioid use and specifically heroin use, young women in certain areas, the use has gone up by as much as 600%. They're greatly affected. And so I think it's a really timely story, even though it took place a while ago. I think that there are a lot of girls like me now.
It is your story, but it does ring true because we read about it, and we, mm-hmm. I think most of us know someone who has been affected by it, or a family that has been affected
by the
scourge. The thing, though, that I found so interesting in your book, that yes, there are a lot of memoirs out, but heroin for you, and you talk about this beautifully in the book, is how it shaped just every aspect of your life, mm-hmm. which is so important to keep in mind because you were so young.
Right. Right. It absolutely did. I mean, I don't know, you know, it affected the way that I was in my relationships. It affected the way that I interacted with my family. And it kept me really isolated. At the same time, I say in the book, and I do feel that this is true, when I first found heroin, in a certain way, it kept me alive, because what was really underneath the drug addiction was extreme depression that was untreated, extreme anxiety, and PTSD from the childhood trauma. I think that a lot of addicts, particularly those who are using opioids, have at least one of those, have at least a mental health issue that's untreated, and or some sort of PTSD.
So what do we do with those who are addicted and not looking at them as criminals or as outcasts of society, and instead looking at them as victims?
Well, here's the thing, is that, you know, I think that policy is changing, but I certainly grew up in the era of the war on drugs. And, you know, it does nothing to help people struggling with addiction to criminalize the issue. You know, I recently wrote something for Salon about this old model in sort of rehabs and in 12-step programs of tough love. And I think that while, of course, we need to have boundaries with anyone in our life, you know, least alone people who are in throes of addiction, but this idea of tough love really just piles shame on top of shame for people. You know, the thing that I say constantly about this is that it is not a moral failing. Addiction is not a moral failing. People who are struggling with addiction are human beings struggling with a human condition. And when we look at addiction through that lens, rather than othering them and marginalizing them, we can approach dealing with the crisis in a different manner.
When you talk about recovery, there are many ways and many paths to recovery. For you, it really began with motherhood.
Yes. Yes. And I feel very lucky for that. And, you know, I knew that in writing this, there are plenty of people who struggle with addiction after becoming parents. I don't know exactly why it's flipped a switch for me, but it did. You know, there was a single defining moment, because I was still very ambivalent while I was pregnant. I wasn't sure if I would be able to stay off of drugs. The moment that I held my son, I looked at him and I just had this very clear thought, I love you more than I hate myself. And that was a strong enough impetus for me to then do the work so that I would stay off of drugs. But something that I want to point out is that I was able to access care, the sort of aftercare that was necessary because of the privileges that I had. I had financial privilege so I could access care. I had a family who we may have been dysfunctional, but they certainly were there as a support system. And there are so many people struggling with addiction that do not have that. You know, there are racial barriers, socioeconomic barriers, cultural barriers to accessing care that we really need to look at when treating addiction. You know, it's very, very important to me because I, as much as I struggled even with having all that access, it's infinitely harder for somebody that doesn't have those things in place.
Does writing about it in a book like this have you think about, I mean, I would think you'd have several emotions. I guess if I put myself in the story, it would be, well, how did I live through this? And then another one would be, well, why did I do this? It would be so simple not to have. And third would be, okay, now that I have all these feelings that I'm dredging up, how do I make sure I don't do it again?
Right. I mean, you know, the good thing is I have 17 years of distance from the last time I used drugs. So that's right. Extremely beneficial. I think that the thing that I came out of this having that I didn't have before I wrote the book, even though, you know, I'd done all this work, so I had, you know, I don't have the shame about it anymore, which is huge. And certainly I think in opening up about our stories, we lessen the shame for ourselves and others. But the biggest gift I got from this is that I really learned to have compassion for the person I was then. Because that was something that took me a very long time to come to, and I think it really cemented itself in writing this book. I have so much compassion for me at 8, at 13, at 23, at 28. I see myself very differently than I saw myself then. I gave myself very little leeway in terms of compassion and expectations then. So that has been a true gift in sort of looking back on this. And I don't, you know, in terms of like moving forward, people often ask me, like, am I worried that I would ever use drugs again? And I think that, you know, having initially found sobriety in 12-step programs, there was this idea that like, oh, it could happen to anyone at any time, no matter how long it's been. And I really don't feel that way for me. I think that it was so bad for me in the end, in the sense that it didn't give me any relief. And so it just didn't give me anything that I was looking for and only caused more shame and upset and anxiety. I've had painkillers post-surgery two or three times in the last 17 years. And I did not experience any of the pleasure that I used to because it immediately ignites this anxiety in me.
Right.
So it's just not a solution that I would go to anymore. I have walked through painful situations that I never thought I could walk through sober. And so I think having, like, the more that you do that, the more you realize that, like, the solution is really, like, allowing yourself to feel whatever you're feeling and to acknowledge it. And I have faith that there's nothing that I could feel now, no matter how awful, that I couldn't get through. And that's a huge deal. I never believed that before, and I really do now.
The name of the book is Strung Out, One Last Hit and Other Lies That Nearly Killed Me. The book is published by Park Row. Erin Carr, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you so much, Joe.
Thank you very much. Again, Erin Carr's new book is Strung Out, One Last Hit and Other Lies That Nearly Killed Me. Erin will be part of the volume reading series at Spotty Dog Books and Ale in Hudson on Saturday, March 14th at 7 p.m. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.